Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And it's time now for our COVID questions panel. I'm joined on the line by Dr. Kim Roberts, Assistant Professor of Virology at Trinity College, and Dr. Yvonne Williams, GP in the Shannon Medical Centre. Good morning to you both. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
So if listeners have any COVID-related health questions and you want to get them into us, there is still time. Today, cb at rte.ie or text 51551, even though we have quite a few already. Let's get straight through to it. Yvonne, I'm going to start with you because Sally has been in touch and she wants to know if the AstraZeneca vaccine is safe for a person with an already existing bleeding disorder, thrombocytopenia. The disorder is totally stable at the moment, but could the vaccine cause an escalation of the symptoms? Do we know the answer to that question?
We don't have a complete answer to that question, but in general terms, what's happening with the AstraZeneca vaccine is quite different. It's an autoimmune response. So if that lady is over 60 and her thrombocytopenia isn't autoimmune, then there shouldn't be any increased risk for her in getting the vaccine.
Okay, and Kim, this one is for you. Mary has emailed us. She's in her mid-60s. She's been ultra careful in relation to COVID, hasn't seen her elderly mother, for example, or young adult children for months. In the plan to administer AstraZeneca to the 60 to 69-year-olds, I can't understand why no mention is made of the fact that this vaccine has very low efficacy against the South African variant. Is this entire age cohort to be left vulnerable and unsure if they have adequate cover?
So this is one of the problems with being too reliant on vaccines to control transmission. And there's been a lot of discussion, but there's not so very much data so far on how the different vaccines protect against different variants. The 10% referred to here comes from a small study that found that people who had had two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine could still get mild to moderate COVID if infected with the South African variant B1351. What we don't know from that study is if the vaccine reduced the risk of hospitalization, which is one of the main reasons why people are encouraged to take the vaccine. It's to reduce the severity of any infection they get. And we don't have that data yet because the study was small and there were no participants in the trial, either in the placebo group or the vaccine group, that needed hospital treatment. In the meantime, though, I think we can take comfort in the data that shows that the AstraZeneca vaccine is effective against the UK variant or the B117 variant, which is still the dominant variant in Ireland at the moment. I can't comment on policy or strategy, but it's my understanding that the vaccine manufacturers are working on second-generation vaccines that will provide better protection against newer variants and that hopefully they'll be available in the autumn.
So can I extrapolate from what you're saying that you believe the vaccine that you're offered is the vaccine that you should take?
I think there's still a lot of benefit in getting the AstraZeneca vaccine, absolutely.
Okay, and the next one, Yvonne, is for you. This listener says, my husband and I both have had COVID. We're both well. We're now waiting for vaccines. My dilemma is my husband has an underlying disease. He's in his 70s. I'm in my late 60s. I'm his full-time carer. I've decided not to take the AstraZeneca vaccine because I believe we have lots of antibodies. We do not socialise or mix outside of our family bubble. Am I making the right decision?
I wouldn't think so. For that lady's husband who's in his 70s, it would be a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine he would be offered, and I would absolutely be encouraging them to take it because we don't know how long natural immunity lasts. We thought initially 3 months, possibly 6 months, but the Pfizer vaccine that her husband would be able to avail of would give immunity possibly for longer than that. In her case, she's between 60 and 70, so she would be offered the AstraZeneca vaccine based on our current guidelines. And again, that may give her protection for much longer than her natural immunity.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about surfaces now. And Ray's question brings me to that. Is it safe to handle and use self-service coffee cups and lids that stick together? I always feel uncomfortable touching shared surfaces, but there are still a lot of them around. I see all cups and lids of a certain brand sticking together, so they need to be prized apart with two hands. I use a napkin when handling anything that will be left there for other people, but I never see anyone else touching anything but their bare hands. Kim, surface transmission, what do we know about this?
So the latest data suggests that the risk from surface transmission, particularly in a community setting, is very low. And there was a report recently from the US Center for Disease Control that discussed the evidence, and that they said that in a community setting, you know, disinfecting surfaces once or twice a day had little impact on reducing transmission, but good hand hygiene can reduce the transmission risk. So in the example that you're talking about here, where you're talking about coffee cup lids and things like that, it is about, as a society, that we're keeping our hand hygiene really, really to a high standard, using hand sanitizer that's available in the cafes and in shops before and after we're touching anything. The risk from contaminated surfaces is low. The exception, of course, is if somebody in your household is actually sick, then it's important to wipe down surfaces that are communal surfaces within the household, such as bathrooms.
Okay, and Yvonne, Mary has woken up this morning feeling nauseous and tired and wonders, should she be worried about COVID? Should she get a PCR test?
So sorry to hear that Mary is feeling unwell. They could be symptoms of very mild COVID, but the criteria for testing at the moment wouldn't include those symptoms. It would be people with cough, loss of smell or taste, breathing problems or a temperature, but Mary should get in contact with her GP and get advice, and she should isolate in her bedroom at home until she's spoken to a healthcare professional.
Okay, so have a chat with the GP, Mary. Kim, this one, can you ask about the dangers of breathing in passing smoke outside? I walk every day and very often I inhale smoke, either real or from an e-cigarette that could it transmit COVID is her question. That's a really interesting one. I think we're much more aware, aren't we, of inhaling smoke, whether it's electronic smoke or real smoke as we walk?
Absolutely, because smoke has a smell, and so that triggers that sense, which is different from just breathing in air where there might be virus particles. The risk of transmission through droplets in the air is quite substantial in an enclosed setting. So when you're indoors, that's why we're encouraged to stand at least 2 meters apart at all times and wear face coverings. Outdoors, the risk is a bit lower because there's more ventilation, the air's moving around more, and so any virus in the air is being more dispersed. One thing to remember is that we have to be exposed to a minimum number of virus particles to get infected. And whilst we don't know what that number is, we know that it's less likely that you'll get infected if you're outdoors or if you're indoors, rather than if you're indoors. And of course, one way of reducing that risk indoors is to open up the windows, increase ventilation, so that the air is moving around more.
But what I feel, if I walk past somebody who's smoking, if I can smell that, I've inhaled what they've exhaled.
And that's been used as an example of demonstrating to people how we are sharing breath even when we're outside. So I think it is a warning, and we can use it as a cue to think about the importance of keeping distance and wearing face coverings. But it's slightly different breathing in the smoke than being infected, because the smoke triggers those smells which amplifies that signal for our body. And our body has lots of ways of blocking infection. So it's not a perfect analogy for telling us whether or not we're at risk. Mm-hmm. But it is a good way of reminding us that virus can travel in the air.
Absolutely, and keep a wide berth of people, regardless of whether they're smoking or not. Yvonne, you might take this one for us. Can you ask about the use of aspirin to help offset blood clots with the current vaccines, says Deirdre. So I assume Deirdre's asking, should you take aspirin around the time that you're getting vaccinated?
Yeah, so in short, no is the answer. And we'd often get these questions from people going on long-haul flights wondering if they take aspirin, will it lower the risk of clots in their legs or lungs? And it doesn't. We use aspirin for different reasons, and people who've had heart attacks and strokes or mini-strokes. So the answer is no, not to be taking an aspirin randomly if you're being called in for a vaccine. It won't make any difference to this particular type of clot that we're seeing very rarely after AstraZeneca. It's a different process.
Okay, and Kim, do the health experts believe that public toilets should remain closed? If we had more of them, is transmission a risk from lots of people using indoor spaces? And we had this consideration on Clareburn Live on Monday night when we were talking about using outdoor spaces, and if we have more portaloos, who gets the job of cleaning them, and are they at risk? So what do you say to that person who wants to know whether you believe they should remain closed?
Absolutely. The difficulty with particularly portaloos is, of course, they're in closed spaces and they're not ventilated well. So you're not getting that movement of air. And so if you've got lots and lots of people using these very small enclosed spaces, there is a chance of potentially somebody else going in and being infected. And similarly with that communal space, with using the sinks and things. So I would be hesitant about using communal toilets at the moment, for sure.
Then you see you have a problem with the old outdoor summer and everybody drinking and dining outside in the summer months. Where did they go?
Absolutely. And also, you know, when thinking about outdoor dining and being outside, you know, it's really important that people think about keeping distances and making sure that they feel comfortable and safe from the spacing of tables within any kind of outdoor dining area, and keeping households or trying to limit households mixing in those outdoor spaces. And as we've seen, you know, from the videos in the UK over the last couple of days, you know, close range transmission is still a risk even when outdoors, and so we just need to be mindful about that as well.
Absolutely, it's a conundrum in itself. Yvonne, I want to go back to something you said earlier when Mary was saying that she woke up feeling unwell. You were saying that her symptoms wouldn't lead to a test under the guidelines. Have those changed, the criteria that will lead the GP to make a decision as to whether you should go for a test?
So the guidelines have changed a couple of times since March last year, but the current ones have been in place for quite a few months. So they would be anybody with a temperature, anybody with a cough or a change in their chronic cough, anyone with new breathing problems or a change in their breathing, a loss or change of smell or a loss or change of taste. But we do know, particularly with the UK variant, some people get fatigue. That's quite a common symptom. And nearly one in three people fatigue and being tired and aches and pains are quite common. And about a third get a cough as well. So one in four people with COVID won't have a temperature. So the symptoms are vague and they're varied. And it may start with feeling generally tired, unwell, an upset tummy.
Okay, is there any interaction between the flu vaccine and the COVID-19 vaccine? There's an interesting one, Kim, for you. This person got the flu vaccine last autumn. She wants to know, is it okay to take both vaccines this autumn, the common flu vaccine and COVID?
So the two vaccines are there to prime your body and protect your body against infection of two different viruses. The influenza is very different to the coronaviruses. And I think going forward, people will be encouraged to have both vaccines, both the COVID vaccine and the influenza vaccine. We've not had much influenza around this last year because all of the interventions we're using to prevent COVID transmission is also preventing flu transmission. But as those restrictions are removed, I think we will see more influenza, and so people will be encouraged to have both vaccines.
And I'm sure lots of people who've had the COVID-19 vaccine also have had the flu vaccine, and there's been no evidence, we haven't seen any data, have we, of a contraindication there or a problem?
No.
A text from Niall here. I read this week that despite what we thought at the beginning of this pandemic, the risks of catching coronavirus from surfaces. Oh, we've covered that, Niall. I hope you're happy with the answer on that earlier on. I'm going to go instead to this person who's 45, tested positive for COVID at Christmas. I'm okay now. Do I need a vaccine? If I don't get vaccinated, what are my chances of getting COVID again? Kim, I think that's probably one for you to take.
Is pondering on that, perhaps just to go back to that query on the flu and the COVID vaccine,
yeah.
Just to remind people that we do ask people and they have to leave 2 weeks between vaccines. So if you're coming to us at your GPs or to the hub for your COVID vaccine, you can't have had another vaccine within 2 weeks or you'd have to defer your COVID vaccine. So just to be aware of that for someone who's maybe getting a tetanus vaccine or a vaccine for travel.
And it's important to mention that if you've had a vaccine within the last 2 weeks. So coming back to our 45-year-old Kim, the conundrum about testing positive at Christmas, do I need to get a vaccine?
So the main strategy that countries like Ireland are using at the moment is to use vaccines to protect as many people as possible and to reduce the number of people going into hospitals. And my understanding is that people are being encouraged, even if they have previously been infected, to get the vaccine because that will boost their immune response and hopefully mean that they have a longer lasting immune response than we have just from natural infection alone.
There was talk, though, wasn't there, that, you know, people who had tested positive for COVID either shouldn't get the vaccine or should be further down the queue? Kim?
Yes. I mean, it's difficult. And as I say, I can't comment on kind of policy and the vaccine rollout.
I think that was a suggestion coming from immunology that perhaps it should be examined and looked at rather than a policy question. But anyway, we'll move on. John says, is it safe to take a short lift in a car? Yvonne?
So if you're in a car for 15 minutes with somebody, that's will put you at risk of being a close contact. So if both people in the car are fully vaccinated, obviously the risk is much lower. That would be the same as perhaps meeting someone inside. If you've no other means of transport, we would encourage both people to wear a mask and to open the windows opposite you. So the window opposite the driver and the passenger would sit on the other side of the car with a window opposite to try and reduce the risk.
Okay. And this listener, just to finish, Kim, says, how do I know I've had COVID if I didn't have symptoms?
The only way is to be tested to see if there are antibodies, because if you've not had a positive test, you don't know whether or not you had COVID or another respiratory illness. And if there weren't any symptoms, then you wouldn't know. And that's one of the difficulties, is that as we're walking around, we don't know if we are susceptible or not. And therefore, even if you've had the vaccine, even if you've been sick with COVID, it's still worthwhile keeping up with all of the transmission reduction measures, good hand hygiene, wearing a mask, so that you stay protected and you protect the people around you.
Well, listen, thank you both very much indeed for taking so many questions. And we have so many more that we can get to as well the next time we talk. That's Dr. Kim Roberts and Dr. Yvonne Williams.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.